This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Defense. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defense on FNX and StadiumScene.tv. If you're interested in going to any stadiums in America or Canada, you can visit StadiumScene.tv and you can see NBA arenas, NFL arenas, NASCAR arenas. I've never been to a NASCAR event. Mind you, I've never been to an NBA or NFL event. So, yeah, visit StadiumScene.tv. Anyway, I have three co-hosts with me tonight. No, I do have three. I've got four. I've lost count. My first co-host, starting with Mr. Yanakis J. Welcome back, my friend.
Hello, mate. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, Yan.
Good evening.
There we go. He's happy as Larry. Speaking of happy as Larry, little Andy is back. The Liverpool fan riding top of the league. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, I didn't tell you.
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. I seem to be asking you back whenever Liverpool win, which is almost every week now. So.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I want to be on your show every week.
No, don't push your luck, mate. great stuff. Co-host number three, fresh from his charity event at Gig Lane, Rodri. Rodri Giggs, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, it was at Chester. Was it? Chester. Yeah, right.
It was at Chester. See how much attention I've been paying to that event. Sorry.
Yeah, am I right, you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. I'm good. I apologise for that one. I don't know why. Why did I think it was a Gig Lane? I don't know.
What position did you play, Rod, yesterday?
Because I played, pardon?
What position did you play yesterday?
You know what position I played. We just talked about this.
Okay.
No, it was like I said, it was we were against a lot of young guys, and on our team was a lot of like people like Jan. Fat and stodgy.
Yeah, and you walked right into that one, man. Come on, you should know better. Shame
hey,
on
I've missed Rod. I was bogging to him for 2 weeks.
Rod, I've missed you like a missed thrush.
Rod, tell me something.
I've missed you.
Rod, tell me something.
Love you too, mate.
What's with the Hummel kit?
The Hummel kit, I don't know, that's the one. I think that was the rolled it on from last year, so I don't know. I'm not sure, but it was a nice kit.
It was pretty in green. Right,
yeah.
Co-host number four, the returning Michael Finley. Welcome back, mate, how you doing?
Good, how are you guys?
We're quite jovial this evening, as you can tell.
I could tell that, and the word charity was mentioned in a game somebody played, so it's amazing. That must have been a fabulous evening. It was all about charity.
That's right, yeah. Rodri played for the Offside Trust, which is a charity created by Steve Waters for victims of sexual abuse. Rodri played in the charity game against a Hollyoaks team, but Rodri also played with the likes of Danny Murphy and Trevor Sinclair and a few others, so it was a pretty decent turnout as well, wasn't it, Rod?
Yeah, it was a good turnout. Some good people there. Yeah, it was a good day all around.
Excellent. Right. Speaking of a good day all around, I'm going to go to Liverpool and Andy. They reacted the best way possible to Man City's 2-0 win against Fulham by beating Spurs 2-1 in the game of the weekend. Last-minute Alderweireld on goal puts Klopp's men back on top, albeit largely due to Hugo Lloris' howler, which came a day before April Fool's Day, might I add. Andy, I think it's fair to say that Spurs had more clear-cut chances, mate, which probably makes Liverpool's win even bigger and what it means for their title chances, especially. Now, was that Liverpool's toughest home win this season?
You'd have to say, because obviously Spurs are a very, very good side. I know they've not been on form recently. You know, it's 1 point in 15 now, isn't it? But it was quite deja vu of last season, really. The game, I don't know if you remember the game at Anfield last year, where I thought Liverpool were the better side in the first half, and then Tottenham took over in the second half. It was very similar, but luckily we didn't concede a 94th minute penalty like last year. So it was a very, very tough game. For first half, we dominated the game. I don't think Pochettino got his tactics right, because obviously Trent, Alexander and Robertson were causing a lot of problems for them. Obviously the first goal came from that. And then he changed the formation and we struggled a little bit with it. I personally don't get why Klopp keeps leaving Fabinho on the bench, to be honest. I think he's our best midfielder, mate. And when he brought him on in the second half, when we were under the cosh, you know, he seemed to change the game for us a little bit, put us on the front foot a bit more. So yeah, it was a tough game in the end. Luckily we got the goal there at the end, which was from Lloris, who probably was to blame for the first goal as well. He kicked it straight out, I think, into midfield to Gini Wijnaldum, and we scored the goal from there. So yeah, we got a little bit lucky yesterday, but you know, at this stage of the season, you need a little bit of luck if you're going to go and win this trophy.
That's right, and I don't know if you saw the interview with Salah full time. What was that all about? Because he seemed a bit riled by something.
I think I mentioned it when we were speaking about the Fulham game. He's just so hell-bent on getting this 50th goal, isn't he? He's just become really, really selfish. Again, a few times yesterday where he could have slid in a couple of players on a break. You know, that interview he did at the end, it's like he's been... I think he's just a bit upset at the fact that he scored... You know, he's still the second top goal scorer in the league. And I think because people are saying he's having a bad season, he's obviously reacted to it. But I'm hoping, although that wasn't his goal yesterday, I'm hoping that'll give him a little bit more confidence now going into the... but I think that's what it is, though. I just think Aguero's on 19 goals, he's on 17. And Aguero's having an amazing season, yet Salah isn't. And that's why I think he reacted to that in that interview.
Mm, absolutely. And Jan, Andy said he's not sure why Fabinho isn't playing. Obviously, he's a fantastic talent. We saw him rip us apart at Anfield earlier on in the season, Jose's last game for the club. Why do you think Klopp is so reluctant to play him?
I don't know still. Maybe, does he need a little bit more time, you know, for the Premiership? Maybe he sees something in training or matches that doesn't, you know, kind of, you know, appeal to Klopp. I agree with Andy. I don't understand why he doesn't play, to be honest. Every time I've seen him, he looks calm, he looks composed. He's done a job for Liverpool, even at centre-half when he had to step in there. You know, he's very composed on the ball, like I said. And he brings confidence and he allows the players up front to kind of free themselves, because they know that he's going to sit in front of that back four and hold it. And I thought he changed the game when he came on yesterday, to be honest, because Tottenham were getting the better of midfield with Eriksen and the little pockets in there. And he kind of stifled that when he came on. So, it's a bizarre one, because for me, he's better than all kind of Liverpool's midfielders in there. I don't think you can play Milner and Henderson in the same field.
Spot on. He was actually lucky still in the Bayern Munich game, because he played that same free midfield again. He's been playing this midfield in a lot of the big games, Milner, Henderson and Gini Wijnaldum. And don't get me wrong, individually they're really, really good players, but as a unit, it just doesn't work for us. And luckily in the Bayern Munich game, well, I say luckily, but Jordan Henderson got injured after 5 minutes. And Fabinho had to come on, and we dominated the game. You know, I think we would have struggled with that midfield against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, but so, Andy, do you think he plays those three central midfielders because they are physical, because they're very mobile, they can win the ball back? And you know, against a midfield like Bayern Munich, who are very technically gifted, especially with players like Thiago, for example, and Spurs with Eriksen, perhaps his thinking was, well, they're going to try to get us through the middle. And if we've got these three players that can win the ball back and still release it as well as most other players, perhaps that was his game plan.
Yeah, I get that. But Fabinho is actually our strongest midfielder still. He's actually made the most tackles, you know, in the stats this season. He also not only makes tackles, what he does is he releases the ball forward. I think Henderson does a lot of sideways passing, which frustrates a lot of Liverpool fans. It frustrates me as well, to be fair, sometimes. I do like Henderson. He's got a lot of energy. He works hard. Obviously, he's the captain of the team, you know, but he, like Jan said, he's so composed on the ball. He finds them little threaded passes, and he does actually, you know, block that midfield pocket. Like with Eriksen yesterday, they totally overrun us in that second half. And the minute Fabinho come on, you know, we started going on the front foot again. And that's what he does. He releases the front three early, you know. So it's quite baffling, really.
Yeah, my only guess, and again, this is a shot in the dark. I know Fabinho likes to play the ball early, and he likes to play the ball over the top. Now, perhaps, again, Klopp's thinking was Spurs have got effectively three central defenders and they're going to mop up everything that goes over the top. Whereas when you've got the likes of Milner, Wijnaldum and Henderson, they'll play those five-yard balls square. They're playing 5 yards forward and it won't be balls over the top or what they like to call Hollywood balls. So maybe he felt it was a bit of a risk to play him. But I see your point at the same time.
Yeah, no, but yeah, you're right. It's just the only thing I'll say about it is in all the big games this year that them guys have played, we've not won a game. You know, Napoli away, PSG away, you know, Man City away. You know, he played all of them. And I just think we lack a lot of creativity when them three play. Because they're all very, very similar still. They all do the same thing, really. Mm. You know, so never mind. Listen, we've got the win in Italy. And I want Fabinho to start in every game now.
Andy has spoken. Michael, Liverpool have now joined Sete and Chelsea on the list of Premier League teams have gone 37 unbeaten at home. Now, it's safe to say that Anfield is back to being the fortress it was in the 70s and 80s, no?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to be fair, I don't think Liverpool fans ever thought it was not the fortress. I think it was more the mindset. Potentially the players who had back in between that period of the great days, as you said, 70s, 80s, there was, seems to be, you know, a little bit of a sway in exactly what they were at home, no consistency. But I certainly think Jurgen has brought a very instinctful thought process and mindset to make sure they understand how important it is to dominate at home, not just from a results point of view, which obviously pays the bills, but also from an entertainment factor. That, you know, the expectation at Anfield is that you are going to be entertained and the tempo is going to be high and the results are going to go your way. So certainly it now is a place that I don't think anybody wishes to go to, even though on the weekend, I agree, I think it was very similar to last year's sort of game. I think it got stretched late on, very exciting, very entertaining. You know, your comments there about the midfield selection. I think Jurgen has this process that he goes through. I certainly think he sees the value in you know, the vertical play and getting his front three into the highest up the pitch as possible. And I think he realizes that can create certain amount of gaps and problems. And that's why he likes to stick with sort of that hard and fast safety mechanism until he feels that he can release a little bit more creativity out of midfield, because he seems to bypass that portion of the game as quickly as possible to get those front three on it. But certainly, yeah, home domination, you got to tick the box there. You got to be pretty pleased and very impressed of what they've been able to do.
Of course, you're right. And, you know, Rod, Michael mentioned vertical play. What about the horizontal play? Because as someone that knows all about playing left wing back, Robertson was spraying those balls to Trent Alexander-Arnold and vice versa. They were doing that quite a bit during the game, weren't they?
Yeah, you can do it if you've got you know, effective players doing it, which obviously Liverpool have. They've got the movement up front and they've got the quality of player to make that pass. So, yeah, it's effective if it's done very quickly and decisive, and you know, and it needs to be done more often. But you know, it's difficult. It's, you know, it's very difficult, especially when you're against a good side, which Tottenham are. But yeah, to break these teams down, you've got to get the ball down. You've got to make them 60 balls, but you've got to have the movement up front. And like you said, you've got to have the quality, like Trent Arnold, Van Dijk, who can make that pass, and a Robertson, he can make that pass as well. So yeah, they've got the quality to do that, but yeah, it was a good win for him.
Absolutely. Right, Hugo Lloris held his hands up and admitted Liverpool's winner was his mistake, which is quite funny because if he held his hands up a second longer, he probably would have caught Salah's header. This actually leads us to our bite back question, which is: should Spurs sell Lloris in the summer? Now, I'm going to ask you guys this question first before going into what the listeners on Facebook and Twitter said. Michael, should Lloris be packing his bags in the summer or packing his beret or whatever he wears?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, massive blunder. No one's, you know, good for him to put his hand up. I love your analogy about if he had just done that in the game. But, you know, the reality is he is susceptible to a few of those types of activities. And I don't know, one of us made the point there earlier about even the first goal in the weekend with his distribution was poor. I sense that Lloris is maybe on a short leash there. I personally would like to see specifically how Pochettino likes to set his teams out. I think I'd rather see a keeper that's a little bit more comfortable in all aspects of his game. But you can't take a lot away from him either. You know, he has kept them in it a couple of situations. He's got a World Cup winner's medal. He's got a pedigree. But in terms of going to the next level, I certainly think it'll be an area that Spurs are considering looking at in the summer.
Mm. Rod, what do you reckon?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, really. You know, for someone to win, you know, the greatest cup in the world, and then we're talking about, should we? Yeah, he does make a couple of blunders, but first of all, you've got to find out who's better. And there's not many, really. Yes, he does make blunders. And ultimately, if you're a keeper and you make a mistake, it ultimately ends in a goal. That's, you know, that's part of the cause. That's what they signed up for, and they know that. But yeah, that one yesterday was really, really poor. Because if he just stood still, he just takes it very, very comfortably. But he's obviously anticipated what many keepers do, and obviously he's dropped it and ultimately made a howler. But would you sell him? They'd obviously have to look at it. There would be better keepers out there, but not many. You know, the guy's won a World Cup. So, yes, he's made a few errors, but, you know, if there's nothing much better, then I'd stay with him. But, you know, if they're going for a league title, then he costs them a league title, then you probably look at it. But has he cost them? How many points did he cost them? Do you know this year?
Let's have a look. I think someone put it on the 18 points, apparently.
What, himself has cost him 18 points? Well, really, a keeper should be saving you 18 points. So, we're at the 36-point turnaround there. So, yeah, if he's causing that much, that many points, then you'd ultimately get rid of him.
That's right. And Andy, I see a lot of similarities between Hugo Lloris and Fabian Barthez. Two World Cup winners, two goalkeepers, very comfortable with the ball at their feet. Good shot stoppers, but again, the mistakes, it's been happening more frequently now, hasn't it?
You know what? I was having this debate with Spurs fans from a few years ago. I've never thought Lloris has been any good with his feet, full stop, still. I think he does. He's actually really poor with his feet, if I'm being honest. He's done so many things. I mean, there was actually a game at Anfield, again, if you remember still, about 4 or 5 years ago, I think when Brendan Rodgers was in charge, I think Spurs were cruising in the game again at Anfield, and Walker played a back pass to Lloris, and he completely miskicked it. That's and he right. went to Stuart Downing.
That's right.
And he scored. Again, he's been doing these blunders for a while. As a shot stopper, he's actually phenomenal. He pulls off some ridiculous saves. But in the modern game now, you know, we've spoken about this a few times, you know, you need your goalkeepers to be good with their feet. And the way Spurs play sometimes out from the back, he puts them under a lot of pressure. So that's something that's definitely going to be looked at by Poch next season. You know, he needs to improve massively with his feet. Mm. And I think he's always had a problem with him.
Mm. Andy, is it au revoir, monsieur?
Sorry?
I was saying to Jan, is it au revoir, monsieur?
Well, the question is, can Tottenham find the better goalkeeper to replace him, you know? that would be the interesting one, and also Champions League next season. Will Tottenham be in it? You know, I mean, you know, a month ago we were talking about Tottenham possibly challenging for the title, and now a month later, will they be even be playing Champions League football next season? So that could play a factor in both the club and the keeper. The keeper might think, well, my time at Tottenham is done anyway, and the club might, you know, after what you guys said about if. You know, costing Tottenham 18 points, that's a hell of a lot of points.
Wow.
You know, if that is the case where he's cost Tottenham 18 points this season, then, you know, I'm afraid there's only one outcome, and that's changing the goalkeeper. I mean, they've got a young keeper in, is it Gazzaniga?
That's right, yeah.
Is he ready to step up? I mean, time will tell. You can only play the kid and figure that out. So, and maybe Lloris, maybe he might want to a big contract somewhere else now. So, you know, you never know.
Well, put this question out to the Facebook group page and our Twitter page, and quite a few Spurs fans got back to us. Sean Parry, I don't think he's a Spurs fan, but he says, can they afford to sell him? How much has building the new stadium depleted their transfer budget when a top keeper is going to cost at least £40 million? E-Man from the One Up Front podcast says, nope, he's making a lot of errors, but they'll not get anyone close to his level. Now, Dan DeLuca, obviously, as you guys know, Dan has been on the show before. He's a Spurs fan. He says, yes, I think so. There's a multitude of reasons beyond just the mistakes. And I think he was just so angry that he didn't actually explain or go into detail. But Stuffy, on the other hand, you know, my cousin and a former co-host, said, great servant, club captain, solid keeper, great reflexes, fantastic shot stopper, questionable positional sense, average with his feet, but prone to errors, and such errors have cost us, get this, 18 league points this season. On the flip side, he has performed heroics in the Champions League, but I agree with Eman, we will struggle to replace someone of his quality and pedigree. Gazzaniga appears to be decent, but too early to be considered as a credible long-term replacement. Michael Ajay says his high-profile mistakes have been too frequent for me. He has won so many points for Spurs over the years, but in the last two, he's also cost quite a few. Even look at his error in the World Cup final. It's only because France won. It's not easy. It's not really seen, but it was more than horrendous. He at least made it. He at least needs a spell on the sidelines, as many of these errors seem to be a judgment concentration thing. And DJ, as an Arsenal fan, says, how much do you think they'll truly get for him at his age and error rate? And the fire sale at the club, should they finish out of a Champions League position come May, in regards to paying for the late build new stadium in a Brexit pound devaluing economy? Now, I don't want to go into Brexit because, God, we've heard too much about it, but... Yes.
Maybe still got the alcohol in his system, they can't get rid of it.
You had to go there, didn't you?
You had to go there.
Mr. Facetious. Look at him. Christ. All right, so I think the jury's out on this one. Anyway, Rod, I mentioned earlier that Spurs had more clear-cut chances, but how bad was Sissoko's miss? I mean, that certainly was a turning point, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. You know, when you've talked about it before, goals change games, and, you know, when they miss a guilt-sent chance like that, yeah, it's gonna pair the other team up, and it ultimately did, and they went on to win the game. But you've got to put them kind of chances away, and you know, he missed it, and you know, ultimately they get beat. But yeah, them chances at that level against in that quality against that opposition, you've got to stick them chances away, because you know you don't get them kind of chances often at Anfield.
Do you know what? It wasn't even a bad miss. It is a terrible miss.
Yeah.
You know, as a professional footballer, as on how much money he is, you know, Tottenham bought him for 30 million quid. He's at the edge of the area and he skied it about 10 yards over the bar. I mean...
Yeah.
He's got to hit the target.
Watching it, you know, like Jan says, you just don't expect a professional footballer. You'd expect Jan to miss that, but not...
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It was, don't get me wrong, it was a shocking miss, but I thought what Van Dijk did was very clever, because he shut out the space to Son, didn't he? Because if that pass goes to Son, that's 2-1, to be honest. And he just thought, Sissoko, he's right-footed, he probably can't even shoot with his right. Imagine him on his left. And he actually put him on his left, didn't he? You know, and just hoped for the best. Don't get me wrong, you know, he's no, you know, Houdini, but he was clever in doing that. To block the pass out to Son,
I think it's the wrong person. But it's that Son or Son and Kane, and it's ultimately a goal. But he just didn't have the composure, did he?
Yeah, yeah.
Blood rushed to his head, I guess. There you go. Defeat for Spurs made the race for the final two Champions League spots even more interesting. United celebrated the announcement of Solskjaer as a permanent manager by beating FA Cup semi-finalist Watford 2-1, while Chelsea quite literally stole 3 points at Cardiff, also winning 2-1. Jan, after two losses in the bounce, the international break seems to have come at a good time for United. Yeah, I know we rode our luck, but it's another hard-fought victory. Why can't I even say that?
I'm going to make it very easy still. Atrocious performance, 3 points.
That's your analysis, Alan Shearer. Congratulations.
Hey, for me, that's probably the worst I've seen United play this season.
That's nonsense. You say that every week whenever United lose. Don't give me that. I'm not hearing
that. Yeah, but we won.
Well, there you go.
That performance on Saturday for me was... You know what? I was hard to say unacceptable. You know, when I've got 78% of the ball at Old Trafford, you've created two shots the whole game. You know, Watford, for me, deserved 3 points on Saturday. They really did. I thought, you know, they got their tactics spot on. If it weren't for poor finishing, they could have easily won the game. You know what? You can always excuse teams that come back from, you know, from international duty. But United only had two players missing at international duty, so there's not even no excuse for that performance for me. I didn't see it coming, but then again, we didn't play well at Arsenal. We were atrocious at Wolves, and we've come back again on Saturday. Like I said, the 3 points is all that matters, but the performance was terrible.
Well, for those of you on Twitter, Jan has a Twitter handle. It's at YanakisJ. He also has a GoFundMe page because he wants to fly an aeroplane over Old Trafford saying Ollie out. Luke's only been in the job for 2 days and already Jan's
you asked me what I thought. You know, hold on, did you watch the game still?
I did, yes.
Yes, and were you impressed with that performance?
We won, that's the main thing.
That's what I just said. So why are you having a go at me about Ollie?
I'm not complaining about the manner of the victory, Jan.
The manner of the victory was poor. I mean, we've criticised Mourinho's, you know, wins like that, and I have as well. So why can't I criticise Ollie's win like that?
I just think that's the worst performance of the season is a bit far fetched.
The performance was terrible. I mean, there's no hiding away from that.
But was that worse than Wolves last week?
Say that again.
That worse than Wolves last week?
What, in the cup?
Yeah. Well, Wolves when on Planet Zerg? When did we play Wolves last week?
Was it worse? Oh, very similar. Very similar.
You know what? Just say whether it was worse or not.
Was it worse? Yes.
That was worse than... Okay. Right, okay. Anyway, right.
How could it possibly be worse? We won.
A performance could be bad and the result could be good. It's irrelevant. We're talking about the performance. The performance
won.
Is being on set.
It doesn't matter. You won.
I'm talking about the performance, not the result.
It doesn't matter. You know what? There was the worst performances that I ever seen was a Champions League final, 99 against Bayern Munich United. You know what? But we won. I don't care.
I'm not getting into it. We're talking about performance, not the result. The performance was bad. The result was good.
But you're going to get bad performances. But if you win, that's what it doesn't really matter then, does it?
No, it doesn't. That's what I just said. The performance was bad, but we got the 3 points.
Okay.
Well, I'll take that for the next six games, lads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So will Ollie.
Exactly.
But you're not going to get excited. Well, you'll get probably last minute goals, but you're not going to get quality football. Now it's that time of year where people are edgy, people are nervous, people are, you know, live. There's people going down, people are winning leagues. It's very nervous. You're not going to get quality football. You might see it in the Champions League, but in the Premier League, no, it's just going to be end-to-end. It's going to be nerve-wracking, but don't think you'll see quality matches now from the end of the season. Not many, anyway.
Do you know what? I was more surprised with the way Watford approached the game because they've got an FA Cup semi-final coming up this weekend. And they put in a lot of effort against United. And I agree with Jan to the point where Watford were the better team, you know. But the fact is, I expected them to put in a performance like Wolves did against Burnley. So I'm kind of interested to see how Wolves are going to do against United tomorrow night. But let's move on to the next game. And as everyone knows, Jan doesn't like VAR. I'm sure most Cardiff City fans think the referee, his assistants and Jan are idiots. Michael, three big decisions went against Cardiff. We got the blatant penalty when they were a goal up, the blatant offside goal from Azpilicueta, and the blatant sending off offence for a foul by Rudiger. And now, Neil Warnock isn't a popular bloke, but I don't think anyone will disagree that his team were robbed.
Yeah, I mean, blatant two, maybe not one. So, first of all, even sorry, when you sat through his post-match press conference, he used the word lucky. I think he realized that they scraped one out when they probably didn't deserve it, even though they controlled, you know, large portions of the game and created some chances. But, you know, he felt strongly that they deserved it at the end of the day. I'm sure most managers would say that. As it relates to the one for me is the offside. I mean, it's such a bad call. I mean, when you look at it, it's interesting because people are saying, you know, how could the referee's assistant make such a howler? And if you see a widescreen view, he doesn't do himself any favors of what he was doing at the corner in his movement and blocking himself out. But at the end of the day, it was such a miss that I can certainly understand the Cardiff City fans, the Cardiff City players, and the manager being as distraught as they were. Unfortunately, for Jan anyway, VAR would have solved that situation and will obviously solve it in the end. The last man back call, I personally didn't think it was sending off. That's just my position. I don't think it took away a goal-scoring opportunity, which is the rule. I think the keeper probably might have got there. It definitely was a booking, but I didn't think it was that something that I would be that incensed about it. But to lose it as they did in the last, you know, sort of kick of the ball, I mean, I guess the visual of Warnock standing in front of the officials at the end of the game was actually one of the more classic poses I've seen in football management, where he didn't engage, he just sort of looked at them, you know, like, are you kidding me? You know, he just had that whole sort of, and then he walked with them a little bit. I thought it was theater of the extreme, but yeah, totally unfortunate. And at the end of the day, though, that's going to be Cardiff's world in the next couple of weeks. I think they're going to either get the breaks or not, and because it's running out of time for them.
Do you know what? I don't normally feel bad for Colin, but the thing is, you've been a head coach, Michael. Tempers flare up, you know, obviously, you know, heat at the moment, that kind of stuff. And Neil Warnock did conduct himself the best way possible. I know that he waited about 10-15 minutes before actually giving an interview to any of the major networks because he wanted to calm down. I don't know, I just think that he did really, really well to, let's just say, keep everything to himself. But then again, when it came to the press conference, he spoke his mind. What would you do if you were in that situation?
First and foremost, he made a really good decision in waiting immediately after the game, because that's what cost you the money at the end of the day. Because you're speaking so passionately and from the heart, and if you're completely convinced that you're in the right, you can get yourself in a lot of trouble. So I'll give him a large amount of credit for waiting that 10 minutes. But there is a certain situation where, you know, you need to speak your mind and people need to be accountable. And I guess at the end of the day, the situation with VAR coming in is supposedly going to assist in this process, you know. Competition, what's on the line, money, all sorts of things. You're gonna speak your mind as best possible without endangering points or fines in those situations. But it's hard not to hold back when there's something as blatant as that. And now that they've got cameras on the sidelines, he's probably glanced over his shoulder, looked at the iPad of their analyst, who's probably sitting 5 feet from him, and he's gone, are you kidding me? Like, it's not even close. Yeah, and so, hats off to him, because usually he can lose the plot pretty easy.
That's right. And Andy, a caller by the name of Chris called Five Live after the game, and he was asked by the presenter but why Sarri didn't start with Hazard and Kante, and his response was, because he's a moron. Sarri said that both Hazard and Kante have played a lot of games and needed a bit of a break. Can you see Sarri's point here?
Yeah, listen, he obviously thought, you know, he's got enough quality to beat Cardiff, and gave him a little rest. So, I mean, the fact that I think he's a moron, I have to agree, if I'm being honest. I think what he came out and said the other day about the youngster, Callum Hudson-Odoi, about it didn't bother watching him in the international. I mean, I just don't get how a manager can come out and say that, to be honest. Just lie. Even if you didn't see it, just lie. Do you know what I mean? He just comes out of some real stupid stuff. Sorry if I'm being...
But is it because he knows his time is up, Andy?
Sorry?
Do you think it's because he knows his time is up? So whatever he says, it's not going to change anything, is it?
Yeah, I mean, but I found that madness, isn't it? He's just got into the job and his time is up already. You know, it's just crazy. And, you know, he's got a talented team there still. You know, he's got a really talented side there, Chelsea. He's been playing Conte as a right winger most of the season. He's one of the best, if not the best, central defensive midfield players in the world. You know, so he's only got himself to blame if he loses his job. But some of the stuff he comes out and says is just a bit mental, if I'm being honest. But, you know, I do understand why he rested, Hazard and Kante yesterday, because yeah, they have played a lot of games, and he obviously saw the opposition and felt he had enough quality there to win the game. I thought they were terrible, mate. If I'm being honest, I thought there was really poor Chelsea again yesterday, and they really got a very, very ludicrous decision. You don't need VAR for that. That's the crazy thing about it. Why would you even need VAR for that? I mean, the guy was standing right in front of the goalkeeper. You know what I mean? When the crosses come in, and I just found it mad. I just thought Chelsea were poor yesterday, and I can't see them getting anywhere near the top four, if I'm being honest.
Well, this is interesting because, Jan, you and I, we've spoken about the deadwood at United for a long time, and finally, you know, they're doing something about it. Like, Valencia's going, looks like Herrera's off. Chelsea are in a worse situation because if you look at their squad from front to back, David Luiz isn't great. Azpilicueta is on the wrong side of 30. Alonso is hit and miss. Then you've got the midfield. I mean, Bakayoko is out on loan. So, you know, does he even have a future at Chelsea?
Drink water.
Oh, blimey. Then you've got Pedro, who's 30. Willian's 30. Higuain's going back. It's just... And Hazard, we know that he's going to be gone in the summer. There's no two ways about it. So this team needs a complete overhaul. And it's going to take them a long time to even get back into contention for top four, is it not?
Well, yeah. And also, Abramovich is not really spending the money anymore, is he? So what does the future hold for Chelsea?
You don't give me passport, I don't give you money.
Haven't they got a transfer ban still?
Apparently it's two windows, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, mate, you're right. You know, when you look at it that way, you know, the age of the players, it's almost a little bit like City, isn't it, when Pep took over. Had a lot of older players there, isn't it? He wanted to freshen it up in his second or third season.
Yeah, but Andy, he had Silva, Aguero.
I know. It's a poor situation if you think about it. But, as I said from before, still, they're still a talented side. They still should be doing so much better than what they are.
Well, when you look at the players that they got out on loan, who can come back and actually make any sort of impact? I mean, Pulisic is obviously a Dortmund player and he's going to join Chelsea, but I don't think he's going to hit the ground running. And if it, even if he does, it's not going to be for a sustained period. It may be on a short-term kind of thing. It's still going to take him time to settle in. They really need to spend. But as you said, if they've got that transfer embargo, they can't bring anyone else in the summer. So it's back
they've
to still
got on. Batshuayi.
Oh, poof, blimey. Blimey. If ever you needed a social media cheerleader, there you go.
There is trouble, Chelsea.
He's better than Higuain, though, isn't he?
Well, I guess so. But who isn't better than Higuain? Let's be honest. You know, I think Messi's got an Higuain voodoo doll somewhere for those misses in the World Cup final. But anyway. Rod, let's go back to Warnock because he told the BBC that smaller teams actually need VAR against the big clubs, and that referees in the Premier League are the worst. Now, I understand Warnock's rage. It's a 38 game season, though, so a few bad decisions in one game shouldn't really determine their future, should it?
Yeah, but he's bemoaning about decisions that have gone previously as well. Was it an incident against Watford? Stonewall penalty? He didn't get it there as well?
But weren't they like 4-0 down at the time? I don't know if I'm wrong.
No, that would be 1-1.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Rod, what do you make of that? Rod? Rod's disappeared. Okay.
He's watching the VAR.
I can't think who was listening to you yesterday, but I'm just tempted to agree with him that all the season it's rubbish how it tends to say it evens itself out over a season. It doesn't at all. It probably evens itself out over a career. You know, some years you'll get more penalties than others. Sometimes you'll get bad decisions, but over a season, sometimes you get a bad decision, sometimes you get a good decision, sometimes you'll get an even season. But I think over a season, you know, if they went on to win that because it was 1-0, it was 85th minute, it's blatantly offside. They go 31 points, which is 2 points behind the teams above them. Now they're 5 points behind. That could be 8 points behind because they're going to, let's face it, they're not going to beat Manchester City, who they've got next. So, you know, it gives them a massive task now because they're 5 points behind and ultimately they should be 2 points behind or at least 4 points. But yeah, it's a terrible decision and you can feel it. I agree with Michael. I don't think it was a sending off. I think it was a yellow card. I thought at the time it wasn't a sending off. He wasn't going nowhere near the ball, so it wasn't a goal scoring opportunity. So yeah, it was a terrible decision for the first goal though. And then they've gone on to win it, which is just a killer. Which is an absolute killer for them, but you know they keep on fighting. And hopefully, they can get a couple more wins, but it's going to be very difficult for them.
Yeah, well, look, he did say that the camaraderie in the club is strong, and to be fair, that must be worth at least a couple of points at the end of the season. You know, hypothetically.
Yeah, it is. But it'd be good now to play like a team that you can, like a Burnley or a Huddersfield or Southampton team that's down there. But when you've got Manchester City next. You've ultimately got no chance. I know they're at home. Is that home? Is it on City? Is that
City? City.
Yes. You know it's going to be an hatful. He's not going to play the team because then they've got a game weekend. Do they want to be chasing the ball about for 90 minutes on a Tuesday night and travel all the way back to Cardiff? So he's got to be smart with his selection. So it probably won't be a strong side. So it could be a thick score.
Well, he said, Rod, he's going to play his under-23s.
Yeah. I don't know where. You know, I think about that might be a little bit challenging too. But to play the 23s against Cardiff City, do you think that'll do the conference side of the 23 side getting bumped 15-0?
15. Well, I don't know. I just think it just reminds me of the old Championship Manager when the players were under a certain age, they were greyed out and you couldn't select them. That's what it's going to be like, isn't it?
Well, so they've already beaten a team 9-0 this season.
Yeah.
But you come against an under 23 side. No, they'll dismantle. They've got no mercy. The City side, they'll absolutely dismantle them.
Mm. If it goes down to goal difference end of the season. Sorry, Michael, what are you saying?
I just think you know Neil's a little tongue in cheek at times, you know. But going back to your point about the internal, you know, portion of it, you know, Junior Hoylett, who's you know played under me for Canada on numerous occasions, and we've stayed in touch. He's very positive about the group in there, and it's amazing what might happen based on the result on the weekend to spur them on. Sometimes it's just the little things that may galvanize a group, and they may sort of go to war for each other here, and this actually might spur them on in some situations, not necessarily the City situation, which I totally agree with everybody, but other games, they may see it, you know, it's us against the world, and that could be a motivating factor. So, you know, sometimes football's strange that way. What galvanizes a group, and you know, and Junior's very strong about how positive the group is inside. Like, they really feel that you know, as a group, they can at least you know, battle it out to sort of the final day.
That's right. Yeah, I know. You know, if you have that unity as well and that togetherness, you know, you've got a great chance. Like Michael says, a great chance.
Absolutely. Right, as Rod said, Cardiff are now 5 points from safety after Burnley's 2-0 win against Wolves. Jan, Burnley's first has surely got to go in the Kabaddi football file after Chris Wood's shot hit the post and then the defender before rolling in. They're now level with Southampton and Brighton on 33 points, but unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, I actually can't see Burnley going down. Can you?
No, I can't see them going down still, but again, we've touched this before. I think you and I disagreed, which is not a, you know, sort of nothing surprise. New. But can you hear me?
Yeah, I said nothing new.
Oh, nothing new. Sorry. No, of course not. But you've got to give him credit though. Still, I mean, not every team is going to play expansive football. Not every team's going to be open. You know, Sean Dyche manages a group of players to the budget that he can afford, and he tries to get results the best way he can with the players that he's got there. And, you know, for the fact that Burnley stayed up last season and what a season they had, you know, to replicate this season was always going to be difficult. So for them to, you know, they started with the Europa League, obviously that didn't go well. But to still be, you know, where they are now and they're going to be in a good position to stay up, you know, he deserves a bit of credit. Like I said, he might not be your cup of tea, but, you know, you've got to give him credit for what he's done there.
But Michael, do you agree with that?
Yes and no. I'll sit in the fence on that one. But you know, there is some credit there to be given. There's no doubt about that. You know, it's a difficult world. You know, it's a difficult place to be. It's a tough job. So.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, still, just a quick one. What's Burnley's highest ever kind of record signing? Was it Chris Wood?
Wasn't it Hendrick? Like 13 million or something? 13
yeah.
Million.
Yeah.
There you go, still. I mean, 13 million. We probably pay Alexis Sanchez that a week. This is Burnley's record top, you know, record scorer, who's a midfield player that was bought from Derby. So you can imagine, you know, what they compete with other clubs. You know, I think Cardiff have probably spent, I mean, the late Salah, they spent big money on Salah. So, you know, Cardiff
have they actually money. Spent money on Salah?
Well, we don't know if that went through or not, what happened behind the scenes. But what I'm saying is, Cardiff were prepared to pay that so that they stayed in the Premiership. Whilst Burnley have been there for 2-3 years and their record signing is a midfield player from Derby at 30 million. So, He's working miracles there for what he's done. You know, and look at the players he's got. They're all, you know, you could say arguably championship players or maybe just slightly above that. So, you know,
what he's really done is he has instilled a certain manner in which they play, and he does not let them deviate from that. And they stick to the program. You know, it's a club that is certainly also run like an old school club. I mean, there's nothing happens in that club without him knowing it or having
some sort of decision. Huddersfield, for example, stayed up last season, and this year they've gone down, you know, in a whimper. Well, Burnley haven't done that, so you know, again, he deserves credit.
Okay.
Oh no, there's no doubt there is. I mean, there'll be people at Burnley who feel that, you know, if they change the, you know, sort of the mindset a little bit and the culture as it relates to a little bit more expansive off-field assistance, because as I said, that club is run as an old football club. You know, decisions are made centrally. You know, you don't have the sort of the sporting director. You don't have the sort of the analyst and some of the player development people affecting it. He's making the final decisions. And I think some people may feel in the end they need to start becoming a little bit more modern in their ideas that might bring them a better, higher quality player and maybe a different sort of mindset to how they address games.
Okay. I'll run with that. I'm happy with that. Well, Michael, I haven't had the chance to write Huddersfield's eulogy, but their loss at Palace means they're confirmed as the first team to go down after Sunderland won at Brighton. Now, let's be fair, it's been a terrible campaign for them. I think they'll really struggle to come back up. What do you think?
Well, you know, as I think everybody knows, historically speaking, you go down, and if you go down like they are going down, and what I mean by that is like the Titanic, Oof. You know, It's hard to think of you being able to float yourself again. I mean, at the end of the day, the reality is, you know, football is about scoring goals, and they just didn't score enough goals. I mean, there's some nice things you can say about Huddersfield as a club. I think there's some nice things you can say about how they applied themselves and what they did. They definitely, I thought they were punching over their weight last year. What you hope is the club addressed the back end of it, and what have they done with the money that they have been honored with by being a Premiership club for the last 2 years? They've invested in some infrastructure. Their training grounds probably going to be finished soon. They're making lots of different changes as it relates to the way they apply to their development program. They had the lowest wage bill in the Premier League. They're one that you could say you could take your hat off and say, boy, they've done incredibly well with what they had. Wagner getting the sack, did it really matter? Did it make a difference? But I can understand that the clubs, see that big check and they've got to do something, and that's the easiest thing to do. But going down, they've got to reorganize themselves. It's a horses for the courses type environment. And the new man has got to decide exactly what they are in a very short period of time if they want to come right back up. If they feel that they're in a full rebuild, well, they might be able to sit it out for a season, but that's always dangerous too, because you may lose the support of both your players and the general fan base in terms of what they expect from you. But it's been an unfortunate situation. But at the end of the day, I still go back to the fact that they didn't score any goals. They didn't give themselves an opportunity. I never thought they were going to be a mid-table club anyway, but they didn't even give themselves a chance by not scoring. You just cannot survive in the Premier League without scoring goals. And what I mean by survive, I mean actually survive that sort of bottom five, bottom six.
Oh, that's right. No, I agree. We were saying this all season. They don't have a goal scorer. So how can you stay up if you're not scoring goals? But it is what it is. They I guess they live to fight another day. They're still the Championship and they're not in League One, I guess. So, as you said, they're financially sound. So, yeah. Right, in other news, over 85,000 fans turned up at Wembley for the EFL Trophy Final, where Portsmouth beat Sunderland 5-4 on penalties, with a match ending 2-2. It was Sunderland captain Lee Cattermole, whose penalty miss, gave Portsmouth their first trophy since winning the FA Cup in 2008. Now, I'm going to pass this question on to all of you guys. You got two former Premier League sides who've had problems both on and off the pitch. Winning a trophy at Wembley can't be a bad thing, but what does it mean for their promotion push? Portsmouth are in the final automatic promotion spot in League One, a point ahead of fourth place Sunderland. So, do any of you think yesterday's final will have a bearing on who goes up automatically? I'll start with Rod.
It's a difficult one because it could galvanise. So now he's talking about that with the Cardiff situation. With them losing the final, it might give them the extra push, or it could send them the other way. And likewise, Portsmouth, it could definitely spur them. And I don't think it can be a hindrance because if we're winning some silverware, obviously if they didn't celebrate too much and they get back to business and concentrate on the league, then or they could both end up going up, but. Yeah, it's. I'd expect Sunderland to go up because the size of the club and the players that they've got, and Portsmouth as well. They're a massive club, so yeah, it's going to be exciting. But to answer your question, it's a difficult question to answer, really. But you'd expect them to Sunderland to push on now and to knuckle down and to think, right, okay, real concentrate on getting promotion.
Yeah, and what do you make of this? Because I don't know if you've seen the Sunderland documentary. They went through hellfire and brimstone last season. Do you think they're going to bounce back and possibly get the third spot?
Like Rod said, it is a difficult one because, you know, Portsmouth obviously have won the cup. So their confidence will be on a high, thinking that, you know what, if we can beat Sunderland in the final, then, you know, we can tip them in the long run. As for Sunderland, it's down to the manager. The manager's got the most important role now to get the players, you know, back up and running, back firing again. So I think overall Sunderland have got the better players and the more experienced players. So possibly Sunderland on the long run will probably get that automatic spot ahead of Portsmouth.
Mm. Andy, what do you reckon? I mean, Portsmouth got a pretty decent squad themselves. You know, Gareth Evans, Jamal Lowe, obviously the fantastic goal he scored, Brett Pittman, Omar Bogle. I mean, it's a pretty decent squad, but also they've got a lot of players that came from non-league. Do you think Sunderland's experienced squad will actually push them through?
Yeah, I do. But I do like Portsmouth this year as well. I've been actually watching a little bit of them because a couple of youngsters play for them as well that I've seen in academy football. So they've got an exciting young team. Portsmouth. It was actually a really good game. I watched the highlights of it yesterday. It was a good game. Thought Sunderland sort of controlled the game quite well. And then obviously Portsmouth scored a couple of lovely goals, and it was quite thrilling stuff, really. But I think as the boys said, you know, I don't think that's gonna, you know, topple Sunderland's confidence, how they've been performing this year. I expect them to get the automatic spot as well, due to their experience.
Michael, Portsmouth have got Kenny Jackett in charge. You know, he's managed some big clubs, you know, Watford, Swansea, Millwall, Wolves. I know he was at Rotherham for a bit, but Portsmouth, he seems to have found his feet there. Do you think that he's going to be able to build on this victory and get them promoted?
Again, good news is always the best part of football. So for him, I think if he can take this and use it again to motivate another step and say, look, you know, we've proven to be able to go to a final and win. Why shouldn't we be able to take the next step? You know, and so, you know, it can't do anything but help the situation. I mean, the Sunderland scenario, you know, once again, everyone expects them to do that, but you wonder if it could send them the other way, given their history in the last little while, which just absolutely amazes me, quite frankly, about you know, the state of the club in general over the last number of years. But this is a very difficult situation. It's very competitive, and it's the best thing the fans can have, because it's going to probably come right down to maybe final days.
That's right. And if you look at Kenny Jackett's record as manager at Portsmouth, 106 games, 54 wins. I mean, that's practically 50%, isn't it? I mean, that's an incredible record.
Yeah, and I mean, he's obviously been able to put the pieces in place that need to be, and he's been given the support. And, you know, as I say, I think Portsmouth is a club that I'd like to see, take another step. You know, I think the game's, you know, better off with those larger clubs involved at the top levels, or as close to it as possible. So, you know, I hope good things for them.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the German league, the Bundesliga, Jan. Dortmund scored twice in added time to beat Wolfsburg and go back to the top of the table. Bayern could only draw against Freiburg. Now, as you're well aware, I hope Dortmund would continue to slip up, but they're not giving up, are they?
No, you know, they show the, you know, resilience. I mean, their performances lately and the results haven't been great. But for me, the turnaround was, I don't know if you remember, a couple of weeks back before the international break, when they scored the late winner against Hertha Berlin.
Yeah.
You know, that was a massive, you know, confidence booster before the international break, because they were a bit of a wobbly patch. I mean, Tottenham obviously knocked them out of the Champions League as well. Bayern Munich clawed back, I think it was a 9-point deficit to go level on points with them. So, you know, but, you know, Bayern Munich drew with Freiburg on Saturday, which was a massive shock. And Dortmund got them two late goals, which, you know, puts them 2 points clear now. And if it's possible, I think there's still a Dortmund buying game to be played. So that possibly could be the title decider.
Absolutely. And Michael, Wayne Rooney scored another peach for DC United in their 2-1 win over Orlando, which keeps on top of the Eastern Conference. What do you make of Wayne Rooney's MLS career so far?
Full disclosure, I'm not, given the fact that I live on this side of the pond and watch a lot of MLS and obviously have had players in MLS and been around MLS, I'm not a massive fan of that type of player for MLS, but certainly you have to take your hat off to Wayne for his application. There's no doubt he's come here to play and not just to coast. And he's proven that by a number of his performances. But you know, that type of player is, you know, MLS gets all excited about. They like to tie that type of player to things like the opening of a new stadium, which DC United did. He's come and done the business, and they like to hook themselves onto that type of player, you know. But as I said, I'm not a massive fan of it. You know, a league that has to actually use the word designated player in their description, I always have a problem with, but that's just me being the traditionalist and not understanding exactly why they do those things. But he certainly has showed up, you know, whereas I could give you lots of examples over the years of players who've come in with great fanfare, specifically a lot of South Americans, Brazilians, and they didn't even show up. You know, the game itself, Wayne, with his qualities, you know, he can dominate still. He's not under as much stress as he would be anywhere else. So he's able to take, opportunities that are presented to him. Mm-hmm. So and DC United seem to have embraced him, the club and the fans. And so, so far, so good for him.
Andy, I remember listening to one of the old shows from 5 or 6 years ago, and you were saying how good Wayne Rooney was. In fact, he was one of the few United players you rated at the time. He's gone to MLS. We all thought that he was on his last legs in the Premier League, but he seems to have hit the ground running out there, and he's done remarkably well, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's always had a good attitude, though, hasn't he, still?
Wow, are you taking a piss?
I just think he's a player that, you know, you stick him on the pitch, he's always going to give it 100%, you know, and, you know, the quality of him, you know, in that league, you know, he's always going to make some sort of impact, you know. Zlatan's still making an impact as well, isn't he?
In scored twice LA Galaxy.
Yeah, so, you know, these sorts of players, you know, always gonna do well in that league. You know, they're revered from that side of the game. And you know what I'm saying is about his attitude is, you know, whenever he played, wherever he played, you know, he always gave it his all. That's what I always felt about him anyway. When he was a Man United shirt, you know, even when he was at Everton, you know, I still think he gave it as much as he could. You know, and obviously what he's doing over there is very good for his career. You know, he's just gone in there and he's taken it serious. Mm. And that's a good attitude for me.
Yeah. Rod, do you remember last season when Frank de Boer was sacked 5 games into his tenure at Crystal Palace?
Yes.
Well, he's 4 games into Atlanta United, who won MLS last season. They've lost two, drawn two, and they haven't won a game. They're bottom of the Eastern Conference. How long do you think he's got?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? There's a new manager, you know, obviously the teams around him will get stronger. You know, he's set a bar there, team, and they've got a brand new outfit now there, a brand new stadium. And he's, you know, it's a difficult job there. He's took a real difficult job, and you know, if you don't turn it around, he won't see a fit.
I tell you what, I was absolutely shocked that they hired him.
Yep,
and not not anything. That's not a personal statement against him. It's the fact that the type of team they had built around the previous manager and the type of player and the way they applied themselves last year, they were head and shoulders superior to most of the teams in the MLS. And his demeanor, his sort of philosophical position on the way the game was played was very, very different than what the club had set out to establish as their game model. And I think that is being seen. Now, if they're going to give him time to change that, fair enough, and that's where they want to go. But if they don't do something soon, you know, you're gonna start hearing people talking about it. But it's very rare, to be honest with you, in the MLS that you see the managerial sackings and go-arounds that you see elsewhere in the world. They have a tendency to stay away from that type of activity. But I still think it was a shock hiring a little bit, given the past and, of you know, performances and stylings of the club.
Michael, talk to me about NYCFC, because they're second from bottom. As we know, they're owned by Manchester City, and their head coach is Dominic Torrent, who obviously was Guardiola's number two. They're another team that's really, really struggling at the moment.
Yeah, and I think the one thing about the MLS is, you know, it's a cap league. And when you have a cap league, you have an opportunity to go up and down the table pretty quickly. It's early days into it. They're not that far out of touch. You know, they've kept their, again, their look and their game model and what their belief system's pretty strong. It's pretty consistent. And you know, they had a good finish to the season last year. I don't think that the panic button's being pushed there yet, and they've got some good young players that are in their infancy there. I think one of the things that New York City struggles with too is until they can get their club facility sorted out, because it's just a really awkward place to play. I think it does affect both home and away teams. I mean, away teams specifically don't like going there, but. It's early days, but, you know, again, the league itself lends itself to these teams climbing up the table quite quickly, depending on what happens. You have Gold Cup this year, so you're going to have a number of international releases that will come during that period. So there's a lot of balancing out still to come.
Great stuff. So we've gone from USA trash to Euro trash.
And now it's time for Euro trash.
Okay, now, gentlemen, you know what this is about. I've picked three stories from the weekend, and you guys need to tell me the best of the worst. Okay,
and now it's time.
So the first story comes from Portugal, where former QPR, Spurs, and AC Milan midfielder Adel Taarab made his Benfica debut in their 1-0 victory over Tondela 4 years after signing for the club. The Moroccan signed for Benfica in 2015 after being released from QPR, but has spent all of his career at the club playing for the B team. Perhaps they got a shisha spot somewhere, I don't know. Second story comes from France, where it wasn't a great weekend for Dijon head coach Antoine Comboire. First off, he broke the substitutes board when his team went down to 10 men. His side then lost 1-0 to Nice, and to top it off, he was chased by his own fans screaming for him to resign as he made his way to his car. Let's just say the Dijon boss can't cut the mustard. Our final story comes from Scotland. Now, as you guys know, the Glasgow derby has never been a friendly encounter. I mean, you won't see 70,000 fans holding hands singing Kumbaya. Celtic's 2-1 win puts them 13 points clear at the top, but the game was marred by two red cards and crowd problems, obviously. Our Euro Trash Flashpoint focuses on Alfredo Morelos, who received his fifth red card of the season for hitting Scott Brown, although Brown's reaction was just as bad as Paul Alcock's when Di Canio shoved into the ground. So that was it. That's the Euro trash. Gentlemen, what's the best of the worst? Jan?
The Dijon manager one.
Being chased to his car by fans.
Yeah, I think so.
With placards. Placards saying get out. Andy?
Yeah, I've got to go with that one. I just got a picture of the manager running away. Get to it. Imagine he couldn't find the key as well, like freaking out.
I've noticed Michael stayed silent. Has this happened to you before, mate?
I will say this. I've been in Central America and witnessed something very, very similar, where the guy actually scaled the fence in the parking lot and left his car because he couldn't get into it. I'm just amazed that on Eurotrash there's not a Turkish story.
Well, there's like, nothing this week. I tried to find something, but there was nothing.
It must have been an off week.
They let us down. The we haven't heard anything about the guy with the razor, so yeah, we had to, yeah, to pass on that one. So I take it you're going for that one then, yeah?
I gotta go with the Dijon just because it was manager focused, and I can feel for the guy, and the fact I'm just sure he's glad he didn't have, you know, one of those fingerprint type of locks on his car where he's trying to get his hand on the door and it's not happening. You know, he can't do it. Then he tries to get the retina scan and it can't work, and they've bashed him over the head with a bottle of Dijon mustard, and oh yeah, it's top notch. No, I've got to go Dijon.
Great stuff. Rod, full house?
Yeah, number two, definitely, yeah.
Okay. You know what, I'm going to agree with that, although the Adil Tarak one is very close for me, because...
Why has he not played for so long?
Because he's shit.
What, so they've stuck him... I didn't even know about this. This is a new one to me.
Yeah, he signed for him and he's been languishing in their B team for close to what? 4 years.
And how did he do on the weekend?
Well, I know they won 1-0, but in terms of how he did, I couldn't tell you.
Not great.
He was... You know what? He had some extraordinary skills, that guy, didn't he?
Yeah but some he liked his mad skills, like Luke Shaw does.
He's a shisha, mate.
He had some crazy skills, that guy.
Oh yeah,
I didn't know about. I honestly didn't know about.
Andy, you're turning into a robot.
He will love team football. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So
there you go. Andy said his piece and we didn't get a word he said, that because he turned into a Dalek, Doctor Who all over again.
Can you hear me now?
Still? I can now, yes.
Still? Yeah, I was asking how old is Adil Tarak now? Is he still in his 20s?
29.
He's 29.
Yeah, he's 29. So.
Do you think he's under 29 stone though?
29.
Guy loved the kebab in.
29, he'll be in the MLS any day now.
Wait, I don't think he'll do too badly at Atlanta. I don't know. Maybe they. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right. A couple of quick stories before we wrap it up. This one isn't amusing, nor is it a surprise, really. And it actually relates to a friend of the show, Mike Pieri, whose 13-year-old son was subjected to racial abuse at the weekend. I don't know if you guys know about this one, but...
No, wow.
Mike sent me a message today. I asked him, I said, Mike, what happened? And he basically said the opposition scored a goal and they tried to retrieve the ball, so his son kicked it away and their player called him a tubby foreign prick. Mike also said, no smoke without fire. I had already reported the same club earlier in the season. One of their parents is a qualified referee. He reffed the game, gave them 3 penalties. None of them were penalties. He rescinded one of them. At one point during the game, he told me to stop shouting. I told him I wasn't. I've got a loud voice. His response was, that's because you're Greek. Before the game, this qualified ref told me to tell my players he would not accept sliding celebrations or slide tackles. I shit you not. In his report, he admitted to saying the Greek comment, but the FA said it wasn't racist. Mike actually informed Kickout on Twitter and was advised to visit their website and file a report. But to be fair, ladies and gents, I doubt anything will be done because Mike's son is actually in the ME of BAME and they only care about the BNA. But let's not go into that. So, Michael, racism at under 13s or under 14 level, have you ever seen anything or heard anything like that happen in your neck of the woods?
No, you know, when I hear those stories, I'm just generally horrified and sad, quite frankly. But no, I've never run into that at that level. I mean, we've seen it, and I've been involved in matches around the world where I have witnessed some pretty horrific situations. But when you're starting to have it, you know, transfer into, you know, grassroots football, you know, there's something wrong. And, you know, anything that can be done in terms of continually trying to stamp this out of our game is something we all need to focus on, and not be the one who stands in the corner and talks about it if they witness it. You need to be the one who stands on the sidelines and does something about it. So, yeah, horrifying to hear.
Forgive my ignorance, but is this like a punishable offence at that level?
Yeah. If they're playing recognized and registered football, you know, the Football Association has jurisdiction, you know, through their regional, you know, counties, to act if they see fit. If it's unregistered football, I believe it's a little bit harder to officially act on. But you would think the participants within that, you know, sort of unregistered environment would hopefully act themselves in terms of dealing with it.
Andy, your boy is playing football and he's trying to become a pro. What kind of advice would you give him as a father if anything like that happened? I mean, I know that you're a quite, how shall we say, passionate person.
Well,
and I know how you deal with it, but...
Well, still, unfortunately, I've seen it, and I've seen it sort of live in front of my eyes. One of Mikey's teammates, a young Jamaican boy, was actually racially abused by another player at actually under 12 level. You can imagine what was said. It was actually, I was actually disgusted, mate, to be honest. And, you know, I don't know what sort of advice to give, you know, an 11-year-old, 12-year-old boy, to be honest. I just find it, you know, shocking that happens at that age, to be honest.
You know what needs to happen, Andy? Can I have my say in this?
Yeah.
What personally, if I was in Mike's shoe, first of all, which is son, so I can imagine how much it hurt Mike. Second, what I would have done if I was the manager, I would have pulled the kids off, got the game of
Yan, Yan, can't hear you, mate. Can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
I would have taken the kids off the pitch, got them in the changing room, gone home. And that's how you stop it. Because if you deprive 11, 12, 13-year-olds the chance to play football, which they love...
Yeah.
By you know, if somebody, you know, if one of their teammates got racially abused and the referee does nothing about it, they tell their manager, what the manager does, take these players off, get in the car, go home, the game's abandoned. If you do that once, you do that twice. If that team gets penalised, punished, points, it doesn't matter what age, what league they are, what happens is at the end... That club gets a bad reputation.
Well, it happened in the game, Jan, that Mikey was involved in. The ref actually stopped the match, and it was eventually abandoned. So I suppose that's a good step of what happened. But I was just shocked at the age of it, to be honest, of what this kid came out and said. You know, my son didn't really understand or get it because he's only young. But as parents, it was just, you know, you could see it affected the kid. He had tears in his eyes. You know, it was obviously may have been subjected to it before. I'm not too sure, but, you know, it wasn't nice. It wasn't nice. And the game was abandoned, Jan. So
that's,
I suppose that's a good thing, you know, a good step. And, you know, I've not heard anything since it did happen, but I'm hoping that, you know, the kid and the parent and that club was reported.
Rod, when you hear about a qualified referee turning around saying, you know, making the comments that he did, and then the FA just turning a blind eye to it, what kind of message does that send to everyone else?
A shit one.
There you go.
Well, it does, because we're supposed to be kicking it out, and obviously he'll have kids, he'll be coaching kids. And that's where it stems from, the education of these kids who are growing up to be racist, and their kids, and just so on. So that's where the root of it's from. People like him need to be just outed out of football totally because he's a qualified ref and he's basically just the stuff that he's coming out with, he should be banned from football. He shouldn't have these qualifications because, you know, he's tarnishing the good game. It's just a sham, to be honest. Yeah, it's just a joke.
Well, apparently this team is renowned for that kind of stuff anyway, so...
Yeah, exactly. And this won't be just one team. This will be a team in all different counties. So it's... sorted out. It needs to be just sorted out because it's just going to go on and on and on. 2019 we're in. 2019.
Mm. Yes, shocking.
Well, let's just hope the FA take Mike's complaints serious, and I just hope that Kick It Out do something about it as well, because, you know, I think it's about time that, you know, as you said, it's 2019, and this shit still happens everywhere. It happens everywhere. And
mate, when they don't act with the seniors, do you think they're going to act on 13-year-olds?
Well, that's a good point. I don't know if you guys... Have you guys seen the Kick It Out video? Where it's got Van Dijk and it's got a few other players and they're talking about racism. I think it's like a 2-minute video. And at the end, Raheem Sterling says something. You could just tell the look in his eyes as if to say, there's no point in me saying anything because it's not going to stop. A 2-minute vignette isn't going to stop people from behaving like Neanderthals, you know. It's not, you know, it's... I don't know. But anyway, yeah, as I said, fingers crossed it gets sorted. Well, look, I don't want to end the show on a sour note. I want to end it on quite a jovial one. And I don't know if you guys have heard this story, but hundreds of Racing Club supporters took to the streets of Buenos Aires on Sunday to celebrate their team's first championship since 2014. One fan in particular took it one step further by turning up with a skull. But it wasn't just any skull. No. It was the skull of his grandfather's. Gabriel Aranda said he took his grandfather's skull along so he can celebrate Racing winning the League 2. Andy, what will you take to Anfield if Liverpool win the league?
Did you say this was jovial? he took a skull?
Yeah, an actual skull.
Oh, mate.
It was his granddad's skull.
That's mad.
Didn't have a jaw or anything, but it was like a... Yeah.
Did this guy get arrested after by the...
No, he made national news, though, and it wasn't even April Fool's, because in Argentina, they've got their own April Fool's, which is in December, so it wasn't an April Fool's. It wasn't an April Fool's joke, so, yeah.
Oh, God.
Andy, you got any dead goldfish in the toilet you haven't flushed or anything like that? You can take that.
That's crazy, man. That's top crazy, isn't it?
Jan, what would you take to Old Trafford if United win the Champions League?
A kebab, mate.
Oh, come on, you're only encouraging the racial undertones here. Come on now.
What would I take? I take my mate Rod so we can celebrate together.
That's quite romantic.
Thank you.
Yeah, but you might end up a skull.
Pardon?
He might end up as a skull, Rod. If he
Rod would kill me instantly.
Michael, what would happen if Canada win a major tournament or something along those lines? I mean, the nation would go ballistic, wouldn't they?
Yes. You know what? I'll tell you a quick story because it's quite funny. As it relates to winning something, I was part of the under 15 national team staff, and there was with another coach. His name's Stephen Hart, who now is coaching the Halifax Wanderers in the about to kick off Canadian Premier League. And we were in charge of the U15 program a number of years ago, and we were in the Caribbean for a CONCACAF championship, which was a challenge in itself. And we ended up winning it, and we ended up beating El Salvador. And we were all sitting in the meal room, and Stephen came in, and Stephen's from Trinidad and Tobago. And he says to us, you know what, come here, we've got a problem. And I said, what's wrong? He says, well, I've just talked to customs, and they're not going to allow us back in the country. And I said, why is that? And he says, they've never seen a soccer trophy come into the country, so they're not sure they want to let one back in. So, true story. A major tournament? That would be a statement in terms of all what's trying to go right in the country. So we shall see. Gold Cup on the horizon. And We'll see what happens. But yeah, no, the country would go.
What would I take?
Yeah.
I don't know. My grandma's Zimmer frame. I don't know. Waving around in the air. I remember going to Blackburn a few years ago when Carlos Tevez scored the last minute equaliser. And there's a fan about two rows from the front, and he had a broken leg. And all I saw was a whole bunch of United fans on the ground, just like celebrating. And this guy's waving his crutch in the air.
Here's one for you. I was many moons ago in the black and white days. Celtic Football Club was playing Juventus in the old European Cup, and I was a youth player at that time at Celtic. Way back on trial, and my dad came over, and we went to the game, and Celtic scored, and the guy behind us spat his teeth out, and it sailed over the front row, and it hit my dad in the forehead, and he dropped to the ground, and the guy's scouring over the top of everybody, saying, "Watch out for my teeth! Watch out!" Because everyone was jumping up and down. But I'll never forget that.
How did your dad explain the teeth marks to your mum?
Well, that's what I was gonna say. You know, like, and it was like, you go to a game like that, you think you're gonna get hit by a bottle, but you end up getting hit by some man's teeth. So that's true.
You must have seen some legends in that match, Michael.
Oh, I saw a number. Over, when you talked about that story earlier about the Old Firm games there, that was just, you described to me that was an everyday occurrence at those games. Some of the stuff that was witnessed, and way back when it was even, you know, the level of unacceptable was beyond. And the most intense derby match I've ever seen, you know, other than we discussed a while ago about the Turkish derby. I think this has got to be one of the most intense derbies ever. I encourage everybody to go to them.
This Celtic Juve game, was that when Liam Brady was at Juve?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was when they had, I think, wasn't Dino Zoff in goal? Tardelli was there, Bonini.
Yeah.
Amazing. Wow, what a
and
game.
It was at the old Parkhead, so it was not the enclosed stand. It had that sort of, you know, very low ride glancing stand that went out. It was amazing.
What year was that, Michael?
82, 83.
So Kenny Dalglish wouldn't have been there that year then.
No, for Celtic. No, it wasn't.
All right. No, yeah. They probably had people like David Proven.
Billy McNeil would have been was the boss at that time. Who else? Charlie Nicholas would have been in that team.
Tommy Burns, was he there?
Proven. Tommy Burns was in that team.
David Proven.
David Moyes, my old roommate, was in that team. It was quite a night. But the funny thing is, I don't actually remember the game for the game. I remember it for my dad's teeth marks.
That's a cracking story. We need to go back to you know, remembering our terrorist stories, because I'm sure we've all got some strange ones. I mean, Jan, there's the one at against Newcastle
with Matty Patterson.
Matty Patterson, yeah. We thought he was a member of the what's it called, backroom staff. Yeah, it turns out he was a footballer. But yeah, anyway. Less said about that, the better. Right, gents, it's been an absolutely fantastic show. Thank you ever so much for your time. Sorry for the late start. A draw broke, but I'm not going to go into that. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles. Rod?
Rod James Giggs.
Jan?
Yannickus J.
Michael, you're on Twitter, aren't you?
I am at Michael Football.
Excellent. And Andy's suspension has been lifted. He's back.
Yes. I'm back at little_Andy78.
Fantastic. Well, we're on Twitter also at Shoot the Defence. You can follow me at Uncle Stone, because I'm your uncle. We also have a Facebook group page. A lot of people getting involved more and more these days, so please do join us. So until next time, ladies and gents, adios.